Major General Richards, Reel 7.
Did you have anything to do with cavalry at all at this period?
No. Had nothing at all to do with the cavalry, really. The 11th and the 12th Lancers were. 11th and 12th Lancers were mechanized with armored cars. But otherwise, as far as I knew, they were going to remain with their horses. Still, when we got to... In 1940, I found myself tank advisor to General Wavell, and we then had the task of mechanizing the cavalry division, which was in Palestine. And, of course, they were only too anxious to get tanks because that's the only way they get into action. But there were so few tanks about that they had, it was a very slow process, the mechanization.
During the tank brigade exercises, had you worked with territorial units at all?
Yes. Duke of Westminster's.
How did that work out?
Oh, very well. Very good lot.
Can you remember what was being done with them? How they were used?
No, they were being used exactly the same way as we were using the tank brigade, tank battalions. They would do their training by sections and then by companies and then or squadrons, whatever they call themselves, and by the regiment. You know, their basic training was just based on the same as tanks.
Did you have any thing to do with the fact that they became crew members? They had in some of the exercises they were actually became crew with the tank corps.
Oh, did they? I don't know. I don't remember that. They might have done. Yes, it's quite likely.
Were you affected at all by the expansion of the tank corps at this period? Towards the war.
Yes, what was it expanded? Did we have one battalion or extra? That's by law. I think the 6th battalion. We had 5 battalions before, and I think 6 was added on, but I had nothing to do with that. I don't think it affected us. Probably helped promotion a bit, I don't know.
What was the sort of reaction when it became the Royal Armoured Corps? You became part of that.
Well, I don't know, because well, as far as I knew, we were the Armoured Corps, and that was that. What the reaction was, I just don't know. As far as I was concerned, the reaction was nil.
Would you say at this time, you regarded yourselves as sort of experts in armoured warfare?
Well, I don't know. I should have thought we were experts in armoured warfare. I should have thought so. Anybody had asked me that, I should have said I knew as much as a lot of people knew about it because I'd been with armour since 1916. If anybody got a better record than that, they can say so. But I just don't know how you grade yourself as an expert. I have no idea.
Would you say that there was a feeling in the tank brigade that there should be more of them, more tank brigades?
Oh, yes. That was the trouble. We knew perfectly well that if and when the war came, we'd head it. And got a hope.
Did Hobart ever discuss this with you, talk with you about it on this sort of basis?
Well, I'm quite sure he did, but he never stopped talking. So he must have done.
Did he talk fairly frequently in, you know, in sort of mess situations and things, did he, about mechanization?
I just don't know. I just couldn't answer that one. as I say, he never stopped talking about mechanization, so I presume he did.
What did your job consist of when you were at the senior officers' school at Sheerness?
Well, there again, we were teaching officers, majors, senior majors, and so on, the job for commanding a regiment or a battalion. They were going through there, and this was a kind of course which they did before they got command of their unit. That was our job. And we just did exercises there like we did anywhere else, like the staff college and so on, just the same. And lectures. And did a lot of talking in the mess with, between one another and so on, got a lot of information that way. But there's nothing very different to what from the staff college days.
Where were these officers coming from?
Every unit in the British Army. And territorial units, too.
And how long did it last for them?
I think the course was about 3 weeks to a month, I'm not quite sure. Something like that.
Do you remember the kind of things you were actually teaching?
No, we were just teaching everything. Everything to do with the Army, like administration, technical exercises, so on.
Did you touch much tank work?
We did tank work as well. Oh, yes. That would come in all the technical exercises, you see. We didn't have any troops at all. We had to do it all on skeleton formations on the ground.
In those tactical exercises, what sort of place did an armoured brigade take then? How did you visualise? Or an armoured div?
I don't think we ever got as far as that. We were teaching people to be battalion commanders, you see. So we would get talk much about a brigade or anything like that. It's just a question of all battalion work. Your tanks or cavalry or infantry or sappers or anything.
You didn't have any equipment there, did you?
None at all, no.
What then was the tactical school then at Bulford? What was that about?
Well, I formed that tactical school at the beginning of the war. I was told to go and form it now, and we just taught tank tactics. So we taught there. That was for all, shall I say, captains and majors in the tank regiment. That course lasted, I think, I'm not quite sure, a fortnight, I think. But it was a bit of a sausage machine because the war had started and we were trying to get as many people as we possibly could through it.
You say that you were just told to go and set it up. Mm. How did you go about doing that?
Well, I was trying to make bricks without straw, really. First of all, you had to get accommodation. You had to get accommodation for all the students. You had to get accommodation for all the lectures, lecture hall and things like that. Then you had to sit down and do all the, make out the exercises. I managed to get an officer to look after the administration, so he went along and bought typewriters and cutlery and stuff like that out of his own pocket. I don't think he ever got the money back again. And I had to improvise like that because you can't do without these things. You've got to have people who've got to come and feed and so on, and you can't eat with their fingers. You've got to reduce cutlery for them. You've got to write out exercises, so you must have typewriters and so on. And there weren't any. And so this very good chap of mine went to Salisbury and bought them. We started our first course up to time. But that you were up against all these things there at the beginning of the war. I mean, to get on with the war. It's no use bellyaching about where are my forks and spoons and so on. To get them, get them.
What sort of tactics were you actually teaching? What was the sort of nature of the courses?
Most of our training was it was mixed training, really. Training to for tanks in cooperation with infantry, and tanks working on their own, really, as a tank brigade, and so on. And that was the base of our training. And we based all our exercises on that, really. We were very unfortunate because it was that frightful winter of 1940 winter, when I think there was snow on the ground for 6 weeks. And so we had to get out in all this awful weather and so on, but I think we did achieve something.
You did have tanks there, did you?
No. Oh, no, it was all paperwork. All paperwork going out on the ground and lectures and things like that.
And were the people coming to you, were they from all sorts of units, were they?
Yes, mostly territorials. Most of the regulars were in France, really. They're mostly territorials and so on. A few regulars.
And did you give them a test at the end or
no,
some kind?
No. No, they just... there were people who were mostly... They were infantry units being turned into tanks. They hadn't even seen a tank, probably. And so one had to teach them from the very beginning.
Was it very theoretical? I mean, did you talk about Fuller's ideas and all that sort of thing?
No, I don't think we did. We just talked about our own ideas. But it was all theoretical to a certain extent. It couldn't be anything else because we had no tanks and no troops. And we spent most of our time in the country doing exercises. You turn around to a fellow and say, look here, you're sitting here with your tank troop and there's an enemy anti-tank gun over there, what are you going to do? So that's the kind of thing you ask them. And you had a big discussion on that and you produced a, what you might call a directing staff solution to be discussed and so on. It's not necessarily the correct one at all.
Up against that situation, the one you've just outlined, what would be the sort of stock instructional answer?
Depends whether I got some artillery with me. If I got some artillery with me, I'd tell the artillery to deal with the anti-tank gun. That's their job. Okay? But if you haven't got any artillery with you, you've got to think of some other solution. Depends whether you've got any smoke with you. If you've got smoke, you smoke about whilst you do a bit of movement. So on. Depends on the ground whether you can get around one flank or the other or not without being seen.
What about night work? Did you do any night work?
No, we didn't do any night work on this business. But during the war, night work is based on day work, really. And so if you know your day work, you ought to be able to follow up quite easily with the night work and so on. Because we did a lot of night work during the war, in actual action.
How many actual instructors were there with you on this?
We had two. I had two. The class was usually about... There were three of us all together. The class was usually about 25 to 30, usually at a time. And I think they came for a fortnight, I'm not sure.
Would you say that, as a result of that, that made them... In your experience later on, do you think that this was a very effective idea, this tactical school?
Oh, I think so, yes, no doubt about it. It had to be, had to have that. In fact, it must have been a success because it continued the whole war. It was going at the end of the war, so it must have been a great success. Oh, yes, you have to have something like that. But these fellows had never even thought about a tank, let alone seen one before, I don't think.
In Egypt, with the 4th Armour Brigade, with the 23rd Armour Brigade, what sort of equipment problems did you have, was it?
Well, I was, first of all, command the 4th Armour Brigade. And we hadn't got any equipment problems. We got equipment problems, always had. But I was given the American Grant tank, which was, at that time, a very good vehicle. And I had in each regiment I had two ground battalions, two ground squadrons, and one light tank squadron. There weren't enough grounds to go around. The other snag was that my anti-tank regiment only had 2-pounder guns instead of 6-pounder. First car RC with me, and they only had 2-pounders as well. And, of course, the 2-pounders was quite useless against the German tanks. And that was my main problem. But unfortunately, the 6-pounders arrived about the day before the Knightsbridge battle started. Well, you can't man a new weapon efficiently without a bit of training with it. And so it was practically useless for the battle.
Were you involved in the... Were you involved in the battle axe action?
Yes.
In what ways?
I was G1 of the 7th Armored Division.
Would you say that Auchinleck had handled armour well?
Unfortunately, I don't think it was up to Auchinleck at all. It was up to the army commander, you see, who happened to be, at that time, I think it was Battleaxe. Now, who was that then? Beresford Pierce? I think so, I'm not sure. Who it was from? I think it was Beresford Pierce commanding at the time. Anyway, the snag was that a battle axe, it was a political battle. We were pushed into battle by Churchill before we even got our vehicles. Yeah? We had to go into battle. And we hadn't got fully armed with tanks or anything like that. The whole thing was stupid. But it was Wavell at the time at Agpur Battle Axe, I think, not Auchinleck. And I think there was such political pressure put on Wavell to attack the enemy that we had to attack him when we were not ready to do so. We were badly equipped. Given a lot of tanks at the last moment, a lot of what they call honey tanks, American things, quite a nice little tank and so on, but we had no training with it at all. It arrived in the desert, the next day we're in action. It's a waste of equipment. It's awfully difficult to make politicians see that point of view.
Had your exercises that you'd done in the 30s been of help to you? I mean, looking back...
Oh, I think there must have been. It couldn't be anything else because, after all, we were that was our line of thinking the whole time, you see? Oh, yes, I think so. The only mistake I think we made in our line of thinking was that in the tank brigade we didn't employ infantry and artillery and anti-tankers as we should have done. mainly anti-tank guns because we haven't got any.
You mean the idea of just tanks on their own was not a good idea?
No, hopeless. Germans were first to realize that.
How did the mechanized cavalry units shape up to sort of...
Oh, very well. Very well. You see, what happened really was that when I say we, I mean the Royal Tank Regiment, lost an awful lot of good chaps, officers and NCOs. We had to send them to the cavalry to train them. And they became part of the cavalry regiment, didn't they? And they were there as a nucleus for training them into mechanized warfare, which of course should have happened before the war. That was taking place during the war. The whole time, the result was the wretched Royal Tank Regiment was very seriously diluted over efficient officers and NCOs. On the desert at one time, we had every battalion of the Royal Tank Regiment engaged in battle, which is rather interesting. 1 to 6 were all on together on the battlefield.
You were a tank advisor to Wavell at one stage.
At the early part of the war, yes. I had to go out to Egypt after I left Wolford. They had no Royal Tank Regiment, or RAC Regiment, I'd like to call it, branch of their headquarters at Middle East. And so I was sent out to form it, which I did, and started forming the... That's being a kind of advisor on tank warfare for the general.
What does this sort of job consist of then, as such?
Well, it consisted of getting as much equipment as you possibly could, sharing it out as far as you could to the various regiments, trying to do as much training as you possibly can to turn the cavalry into tanks, and personnel, seeing that the right officers went to the right places and so on. And any new vehicle that came along, you had to vet it and see it was all right. I had to go down to Kenya several times in order to get they were building an armored car there called the Harrington Armored Car, and we had to see to that and so on and see if it was fit for warfare on the desert or not. And all that work had to take place. Any new lorries that came out, trucks and so on, had to be tested by us to see that they're all right. I formed a tank experimental center at Abbasia for that purpose.
What do you think of Wavell as a tank, as a commander?
Oh, he's a terrific fellow, I thought. Terrific. Nothing disturbed him. Nothing worried him in the slightest. He had an awful lot of things to do. He's commanding right from Ethiopia right to Iraq, Syria, the whole of the eastern end of Mediterranean, Crete and Cyprus, and the whole of the western desert, on about 2.5 divisions. I mean, like that. He's expected to do all these battles and keep them under control, which is a pretty daunting task, I always thought. Oh, no, he was quite imperturbable, and if you're in a very tight corner, he's just the type of fellow to have with you because nothing would worry him about his own thing.
Did he take your advice as such, as a tank advisor? Did he?
I was tank advisor afterwards to General Montgomery. And when I was asked for my advice and so on, I gave my advice. As far as I know, it was never turned down. But General Wavell knew exactly where every tank was. Mind you, that wasn't very difficult in those days because we hadn't got many. But I did have 5 tanks in the Sudan, and he called me one day and we had discussed where the tanks were and so on, and I thought I would just keep these up my sleeve, but he knew where they were all right. He turned around to me and said, "What about these 5 tanks down at Gedaref or where it was?" I said, "Oh yes, they were there all right."
What do you... In all the midst of all that battle, he knew about 5 tanks.
Yeah.
He had a very sharp eye for detail, did he?
Well, he must have done. Mind you, tanks were very important in those days. But he obviously knew exactly where everything was, all right.
When you were tank advisor to Montgomery, what was the major sort of difference in approach was there between the two men?
I don't think there's any difference, really. They left you to get on with your own job, and if you had any propositions to put up to them or any advice to put up to them, I used to write it on a bit of paper, and if they thought it was they wanted to discuss it with you, they'd... get you along and ask you to explain 1 or 2 points. They're both the same in that way. Oh, yes. They left you alone to get on with your job. Montgomery, of course, was a fellow who would never read anything on a second page of paper. You had to put everything on 1 page of paper. If you couldn't put everything on 1 page of paper that you wanted to say, well, there's no use to him, because he said, "If you can't do it 1 page of paper, you're no good to me," and he wouldn't read anymore.
He actually said that to you, did he?
Oh, yeah.